no Friday, so
yeah. Get the B-boy and freestyle dance group and do the face when you're sitting with everybody.
Yeah.
Doing this flux.
Cool. Nice. Cool.
So I'm just working on this electronic music thing to be able to put some pens.
Yeah, it's Ivan. I suppose he's proud of you now.
Yeah.
Are you playing it?
No.
Can I try it?
No disrespect, no disrespect, like, because for the elders, man, Cuba did release an album, though, but, like, you know what I'm saying?
No, but you must see, it's a relationship, man. He was here before, so it's like the connection.
Yeah, but this is what it was, Bart Isner, he's a, like, sorry, man. Zakani, we take out the like, color vibes, heavy arm.
No, I know, but I'm saying, as heavy, but it's heavy, favor heavy vibes. The favor is like, KB, if you do this, if we bring you, no, I thought then, I suppose Red Bull Academy, I'm with JVR, all after yeah. Oscar. I said, well, even this jazz festival today. So, yesterday, you know, they made the second announcement.
Yes.
But she phoned me, Yana, for this one, can you come and talk to me for half an hour? I come there, she's like, okay, so Old Switcher is not coming. I don't have a hip hop act. And I can't, there's no way I can make, I can do my channel out there. And she says, worst case is make AKA the AKA. I said, hi, frustrate people.
So what happened with you? So they didn't get back to you?
Kiki, then it was.
Because D was inside of them.
Kiki, night, they wanted to use. That was the idea was about the because it was 15 years of jazz festival, and it made a lot of artists back. Because their roots was never to have the same
roots
before. Like Erika Badu was back, and Kassa was back, Kyle Sherwood was back, because he was standing back. Kirk Whalum was back. They were 52s was now the great guy, you know? That was now a big name for them. So, but Kiki, it was by nature, we were like a million.
I mean, this is good. It was from Q-Tip
Communications. Nah, I meant it was Hebrew place, man. I meant
Q-Tip.
I meant
the Hebrew
place, man. It's from Victor Operasi. No. She asked for ASAP. But you see, they told me 2 months ago that they offered little money. So he didn't respond. Now that they don't have someone, they're like, why didn't he respond? So now they was too little. So they're like, but you should have told us then. They offered more. Now we don't have a lot of money. So I think between us now, they've got about 15K budget. That's what our guys are doing, which is like 150,000. We asked higher the people today. They want 50,000 units.
It's
not bad. It's not a lot of money. Because you're getting a producer. But I'm saying for her, you've got a photography workshop, and you've got all this other unit.
Sorry, but they're short sighted.
Yeah, but they say they can't announce the weekend now because the weekend pass are all sold out. So if they say it every afternoon, it's a dope day, so people are going to say, yeah, but how can you now say it? There's no tickets.
Yes.
And people are going to be bored. So you're only one down. Yeah. One shot.
Okay.
One down.
One down. Easy
this way. Way or this way?
That way.
Way. Oh, I see. One
chill on a recent
video. But you rule the chill, you pass on. Okay. So I don't know. You must, as well as if you can think of someone in
hip hop wise.
Yeah, but it can be hip hop.
It can be some like in between also.
Yeah, but obviously at the jazz festival, it mustn't be a rapper and a DJ. It's got to be like a 3-piece band, 5-piece band. Like Robert Glasper is 8. And that's like the worst case Robert Glasper. So now,
these are the butts of supermarket. Get the lead for lead. Was
Davis. Yeah, but he was here already, so.
Okay.
But, and he was going to have to come with more people.
Oh,
so you're not getting in the LaPalm market. So what we're trying to do is, we're looking for, now we're talking about education, because now they're saying, Common doesn't want to do it because Common is like anti establishment, anti-commercial, anti-something.
Sorry, sorry. This is
my man.
Underground band.
Yeah, so he's like, anti-Coca-Cola, anti. So now they can do like a charity movie where they can say, okay, let's take it, and then obviously you can do that.
What about Chris Love?
Oscar.
Chris Love.
Chris Love.
How about drums with Jazzy Jeff?
I saw.
I like a new book. I can love
some. I'm not going to have more.
Arab music.
Arab music.
Oh, he's also top. I've seen his
music.
Jeremy Adams.
I like his name. Man. They do like a lot of. Is it called the Cool Kids? Is there Cool Kids?
Yes.
Is it Cool Kids? Yeah.
Yes,
but they're nice. Yeah. Because Sam College and Million.
Getting work.
Can't get the Sam College of the Jets.
My brother. Same back.
Because Pigeon John was interested, but no one knows him. Brother Ali, if today, because we can't make it. Brother Ali referred him to Pigeon John. Even Ahmad from back in the day, he's got a band, but Jazz Festival doesn't believe
him. I let it sound political.
I get it all.
He's supposed to say.
Yeah, but they say if they want to die, who's going to be able to go? Because the hip hop also want to see the contract. So it's really going to be like, we've got money. Let's just bring this brat to have something. Because they don't want to make AKA the head guy. Right now, he's the head guy. They can't make him as the international. He's the head guy with the list.
That's like, even double HP is the evil show to say that.
Yeah, but he's not. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was thinking Doobie, but there's no other one.
Who?
Subset. It's too heavy. I would have brought Kool China back in. I would have rather brought Kool back
in. Yeah, alone.
I had to choose between Kool and AKA. But they're doing AKA. But you know, that's what I'm saying. They're also clever. They're giving it to AKA. Because I know, like in 3 months' time, one of them was in the office. She can't check his right. He's worth it. I had to make AKA say to be a fan there. That's how the brother works. It's not like the music. There's no music culture. It's like a small core culture.
Yeah.
I saw him today. I'll make the news today.
She talks about who she is and what her role was culturally and politically in that context. And then how this video was made. And then Shaheen Haruddin was in Canada, in Kanbir, also talking about that moment and his reflection on that particular album. And then the Qatar panelists, and yeah, hopefully more room for Q&A. So come with your questions. Smack us around. So, today's discussion about activism and cultural imperialism, as I said yesterday, it's really an excuse for us to talk about gender politics, which many people who know a lot about youth culture and say, well, that's always the issue that gets slightly overlooked in England. So, none of that here. Let's get straight to it. Can we blame gangster rap specifically for Hip-Hop's gender problems? That's the point of entry into this discussion. And what that has, what this question has to do with culture, with debates about cultural imperialism, will become apparent. If we get sidetracked, you mind us being at home. Okay, so don't just go without demolition. So that's what we need to attempt to do to come back to cultural imperialism. So, to start off with, Shaheen's not here, he's giving the first word, the first and last word of the day. He would say, just as classical strings in the Britney Spears song does not make her music classical music, rap music in mainstream slash gangster rap does not make this music hip-hop. That's his contention. He goes on to say, there's no knowledge of self in this stuff. It's not inspired by DC politics. The thug life, bling kind of stuff is all about capitalist obsession with accumulating wealth, money, etc., etc. In other words, it's driven by commercial interests. That's his contention. I need to turn to my comrades on the left. We'll start with DD.
Okay.
Do you agree with that statement?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. As far as that go, I will agree to disagree as well. Because for me, I kind of look at things from a much broader perspective as well, and kind of looking and following certain artists and looking at certain characters, not just locally but abroad as well, especially in the West Coast. And if you look at somebody like Eazy-E, yes, it has been for sort of commercial and economic interest, but there's been groups and artists out there that they decided to form these hip-hop groups, and they decided to elevate each other to be able to get the music across and also to promote the gang cultures and to promote the gangs as well. So there was one notorious character on the West Coast called Tweety Bird, and I know down in Florida, I can't remember the name of these groups, but it's quite a huge, they have this huge gang culture, and there's a lot of Haitian influence into these groups as well. So there's different, you know, sort of different, reasons why people will get involved with this. And of course, you know, to be able to promote yourself and to be able to make a buck out of it, that's the main thing. But I know in certain instances, you know, there's a promotional vehicle as well. And then on the other end, you know, some people will come along claiming to be a part of the whole thug life, the whole gang culture and everything else, as Ice Cube did. Little to know that these were actually guys that were, you know, had a fairly decent education. They saw a gap, and they decided, you know, that is what sells money. This is what's going to get me into the industry, or maybe help me establish my career. Let's go, you know, with a formula. So that's, you know, just my short take on that.
Speaking of Ice Cube, stay true to the game. Seems to have a kind of black nationalist message. Be true to yourself, and it's German politics. Kind of dodgy, and then there's a song like Fuck the Police, which has become an anthem, inspired people in South Africa, no doubt. Everyone liked to sing that hook. Everyone wants to be anti-establishment, but it spoke to police harassment of random black men minding their own business, right? A lot you could relate to. So even Ice Cube, there's a level of conscious reflection, would you say?
I would say certainly if you look at Ice Cube, with him being one of the writers and one of the members of NWA, which stands for Niggas With Attitude, right through to him becoming a solo performer much later in his career, you could actually see and listen and kind of, you know, follow his currency, a lot has started to become watered down. He also started to become blingy, and then he started to go down the jiggy route, the songs that we are clubbing, and then he did all these other strange things, you know, with his music. And unfortunate for us, you know, as young people growing up and looking at what was happening in the US of A, I think we were extremely gullible and easy to influence in the early stages of hip-hop, you know, before black consciousness or the whole conscious movement came along, because we've been sold the hype as well. You know, we used to follow a lot of these magazines. Back in the day, we didn't have easy access to the internet, and, you know, we couldn't get onto, you know, to Google and all these things to be able to have a much deeper following. And we had friends and pen pals and maybe family members that used to send us all these magazines. And as a young person growing up, you tend to believe, you know, in what goes on in these magazines. And
the source, for example.
The source, Rap Pages, there's been a few from the UK as well. And through these magazines, you'd see, you know, all these rappers wearing these big gold chains and the bling and all those type of things. And there's sort of, I'd just say there's a comeback at the moment, you know, of that era, because you can see a lot of the new school rappers and the rappers of this era and this generation, they're starting to embrace that as well. In fact, to my surprise, about 2 months ago, I saw Coolie China with one of the biggest gold chains around his neck as well, and I'm like, whoa, this is interesting. This is very, very interesting, you know. So I think there's quite an interesting dynamic taking place. So just to get back to Fuck the Police very quickly. Fuck the Police, you know, if you take a deeper look and you analyze what the track is all about, it speaks about police harassment, it speaks about the political state, it speaks, you know, about a certain culture from one perspective. From our side of things, the reason why we gravitated towards that song is, you know, we were in the state of emergencies, and we were harassed left, right, and center. And once again, I just want to use all these buffles. And we were at school at the time. I was at Mitchell's Plain High, known as number 8 back in the day. And one day, we just had all these Caspers and military vehicles storming into the school. All these soldiers started jumping out of these vehicles, and they formed a perimeter, you know, within the school boundaries. And they, all of these guys had these guns that were like heavily, heavily armed. For us, it was a shock. We were sitting in class, you know, as kids in class normally do, not knowing what was going on. The teacher was trying to quiet the class down. You know, some of the kids were up to whatever kids do. The other guys and girls were trying to question what was going on. And then these two policemen dressed in private clothes come storming in. And they went straight for a friend of mine. And they pulled him out of the benches. And his name is Hoja. He's kind of known as the granddad of graffiti in South Africa. And Hoja's just naturally has got a very playful personality. So if you don't know him, you tend to read him wrong. You know, they dragged the guy out of the classroom. I don't know for what reason. They started beating him up. They put him in the Casper. And the teachers and the principal practically had to go and beg, you know, for them to leave the guy alone, because he's never been political in no way. So, you know, it's those types of experiences that made us shout, fuck the police, fuck the police. At one stage, they stopped us in Mitchell's Plain. We were going from my mom's home to a club to do a show in Mitchell's Plain Town Center. They then stopped us. We had a white kid in our crew. His name was Alan. He later became known as DJ Aski, and they interrogated us. There was a sort of a group of soldiers with their vehicles parked on the one side on AZ Berman Drive, and we had to walk past them. They stopped us, they interrogated us, they wanted to know what this white kid was doing, you know, in Mitchell's Plain. And it's a funny looking white kid, you know, he had this very weird hairdo and the whole story. We tried to explain to them, we break dancers, we b-boys, and they wanted to know what's this breakdancing and b-boying all about. And they actually made DJ Aski do head spins, and they made this kid do knee spins on the tar road, you know, till his knees were bleeding. And the same happened to another one of our members as well in our team. The dancer that's on the beginning of your presentation, Ramon. Same thing happened one night when I went to go and drop off a friend of ours in another area in which was playing the stop as well. We were interrogated and they forced, Ramon had this little necklace with a little baby, you know, that he always used to wear. They ripped that thing off his neck, he begged them to give it back because it had sentimental value. And in order for him to get his little necklace back, he had to do head spins. And this guy was doing head spins till his head was bleeding, you know. So that was the type of harassment that we had to face then, you know. So that's why these songs became relevant. So you believe, you buy into the songs, you know. For instance, artists like Jeru, The Damager, there's a couple of other names I want to mention. You buy into what these guys say. Then you see how the careers start to change shape and you wonder what's actually going on with these guys. Some of them came over here, Jeru the Damager specifically. We had the opportunity to have an encounter or an interaction with these guys. And the first thing these guys wanted to know about us is, where's the bitches, where's the hoes? And I'm like, dude, how could you come to South Africa? You were one of our icons, one of the people we looked up to. You delivered so much consciousness through your music. We bought into your music, into your lyrics. You inspired us, you know. Your music helped shape our character, but meeting you in person, you first wanted the weed and then you wanted hoes and bitches. So what gave you the right to come into our country, you know, and classify, you know, the woman as such? So, you know, that's my view.
So commercialization wasn't necessarily an economic joke. I'm talking about you coming to hip hop, the politics is something that affirmed your sort of experience, you know, you came to that. And of course, you drew in a particular direction and you found that a lot of those artists who inspired you drew off in another direction, they go, I can't.
I think so as well, and it depends, you know, what happens within the lives of artists as well, you know, what kind of course your life takes as well, you know, because things might not sort of remain on that path when you were in your glory or your heydays as well, and it depends on the decisions that you take as well, as an artist, as a human being as well, you know, and it depends as to when your record contract runs out. If your albums don't sell anymore, automatically, you know, you lose your contract, and then they try and get you out of the contract, or you just, you know, there's so many different reasons, you know, for artists deciding to go in all these different directions. But I would say that there's always been a sense of commercialism. If you look at how things started out from the park jams, going into the clubs, and you have Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five and all these guys, and if you listen to the lyrics of back in the day, although it was party-orientated music, they always aspired to a better life, and with a better life, you know, you always wanted to have this this level of commercial success. But I think as soon as the big business and the labels, and if you look at the endorsements and all those things come into play, and as an artist you're not educated about those factors, I think that's where things start to go haywire, because we felt victim to that as well, you know, about being abused by the corporate world as well. So that's a very, very difficult path to take for an artist, especially if you're in a creative space. You can't expect that person, you know, to become the lawyer, to become the manager. So in the beginning stages, you're not really taught about all the other elements that need to be in place in order for you to be able to focus and to become successful. And if you're delivering a message of consciousness, no, it's very, very difficult, because I think the mainstream have difficulty dealing with that. And I think, I mean, I stand to be corrected, but Easy over here is sort of more knowledgeable when it comes to what's known as gospel hip-hop, and I'll put that in inverted commas. Although we have so many talented artists in that arena as well, artists in our fields even more talented than a lot of the artists, if you want to call it, in the secular scene as well, that make music that's just as good, just as catchy, and just as easy to digest as well. They very, very seldom receive the necessary recognition and platforms that they deserve, you know.
Hi, yeah, if I can just tag on to what you were saying. I think for me also coming into hip hop, and I think we had a conversation last night, is to hear a song by Queen Latifah saying, "Who are you calling a bitch?" And then, you know, women around the world standing up against these guys who say, you know, obviously it's a music video, so it shows her walking around the street, and Vinny from Naughty by Nature, the guy who says, you know, it's me, bitch, who touched you, or whatever, and she's saying, who are you calling that? But now fast forward 15 years later, Nicki Minaj is saying, I'm the baddest bitch. Prince is saying, you know, and now it's like they sell t-shirts and girls say, you know, we're bad bitches or whatever. It's like, what went wrong? I don't necessarily say that's not hip-hop because it's not for me to decide, but I'm of the thinking that it's like a big supermarket, like a big store. You walk into a store, if you want frozen food, you go down the one aisle. If you want medicine, you go down the next aisle. So you just classify where you're at, but it's still hip-hop. It's just not the hip-hop that I enjoy, it's something that I support. And like you were saying, I must have been like 12 years old and my brother got detained during the state of emergency, and it was just, I think if you were more than three people together, it was called an illegal gathering. And it was him, his best friend, and a girl standing on the corner. The police came and said, it's an illegal gathering, you need to be home. They detained him. So when I heard F the police the first time, I was just F the police because you locked up my brother, you know, but I didn't understand it at the time. But then if I listen to the same guys who went F the police and they say a bitch is a bitch, and I'm like, my mother's not a bitch. You know, so I don't relate to that kind of thing. So I guess something that I was walking to a week ago, and it's a lyric from a song Shaheen said, it's like, money can test your morals when your stomach's empty. You know, so I guess that's kind of what the corporates did. It's like, these kids want to be on stage, they've never been on TV, they want to drive nice cars, they want to have prosperity, champagne or whatever. So we just give them some money and tell them what to say, you know, and I guess that's what it is.
Thanks. So commercial interests, the field is so overrun by commercial interests that it's difficult to actually do anything outside of that. And when you do, you don't get recognition because distribution channels, the media, all of these channels that you might use to actually get your music out there to sell it or access paying audiences, those things are monopolized. It seems like the big other thing in the room is a media monopolization thing. Brings us back to the theme of the day, coffee and tea. So, a little bit of background on that, which I'm going to have to skip a couple of slides now because, as usual, we have heads in the room. They just get straight to the point. Okay, you know what? Never mind that. There's an interview series here, and all those questions. I asked one question, Dee and Shaheen, there we go. They don't have questions, they just like get straight to it. So the best musicians to interview would be the hip hop musician. Other genres are actually quite difficult, speaking as a journalist, former journalist. It seems like the elephant in the room is then the monopolization, and this seems to tie in then to what we've been talking about before. I started the lecture, we started the lecture talking about deindustrialization of the birth of people coming out of the ruins of the inner city, how the kind of economic policy, a shift in the way capitalism operates, the shift from an industrial economy in the States to what would become the information age, deindustrialization, relying on cheaper imports, outsourcing, all of these signifiers of what would make it come to be known as global capitalism, all of these things kind of shape the field, the media field, so that it becomes possible for a motor corporation to own other kinds of industries and monopolize the fields. So generally electric could own a broadcaster as well as X, Y, and Z. And it's been a little Chomsky kind of argument, manufacturing like I said. How is it that can't wait to be said differently. If say generally electric is having a strike, is dealing with a strike in one of its corporations, can you expect a media corporation which is owned by General Electric or whatever else, or Chrysler, etc., can you expect them to cover it? In principle, the answer is no. Media ownership should be divorced from editorial operation, in principle. And South Africa is no exception. You know, your owner is not supposed to meddle with editorial, just supposed to look at the bottom line, etc., etc. But Chomsky would argue that in order for the bottom line to be served equitably well, in order for shareholders to be served well, editors need to make decisions that don't upset its owners, don't upset potential advertisers, don't upset potential business partners, relationships that exist across a number of different kinds of platforms. And this is, you know, this is the problem. If you have a media field which is so dependent on advertising and revenue, and in the media industry, alcohol and advertising is a huge money spinner, right? So whether it's radio, TV, whatever it is, a festival, if you don't have a major alcohol brand behind you, chances are your pockets are not going to be that deep. You're not going to be able to access, you know, publicity, marketing, all range of things. So the levels of complicity between different kinds of industries, it's really, really missing, right? Add to that the fact that South Africa and many other countries around the world are told to relax the markets, are told not to intervene in the operation of the market because that's communism. So you don't want to protect local markets too much because you're scared you're going to lose foreign direct investment. The IMF and World Bank, the logic is that foreign direct investment is the way you grow your economy, but what happens is that Warner Brothers, Disney, etc., etc., can access our media markets. But our local fall makers like the Arm Williams, would have a hard time, he's having a hard time, distributing a form locally as well as in other parts of the form of the world, right? Certainly not the States. You can't just walk into a music store in London or New York and expect to find a popular evolution on the shots, right? But it's really easy to find cars too, or planes, anyway, you know, whether it's an airport in Tokyo or Cape Town, right, a music studio. So that is the problem. So it sounds as if the sort of commercial leader, we don't have state mechanisms that regulate media ownership. Anyone can come from outside and monopolize a terrain and monopolize the market. So there are no controls, right? But other parts of the world, there are such controls. The state controls its markets really, really impressively. It's not easy for an artist or someone who sells mangoes, bananas, to access an American market or a European Union market. It's really, really difficult. So that seems to be the bigger picture. We're still talking about global capitalism, but it has direct impact upon what artists can and can't do. Would you? Do you want to add to that?
That's fine. You can continue.
Anyone want to come in at this point? This is a nice moment. The idea is for us not to monopolize the field too much. Anyone want to come in and disagree, agree?
Yes, on this point, this gets our people. Thanks. I would really agree. Sorry to look at you.
Easy.
I would really agree with Easy. I think if you rewind all the way back to the pioneers, your DJ Kool Herc and all those guys that started it, it was a new genre in music. And it was, like he said, it was mainly party music. But the sub-genres, and I call them the sub-genres, gangster rap, which came later, but conscious rap came a little earlier. Conscious rap, gangster rap, hardcore rap, Dirty South, you name them now, gospel rap and so on. The sub-genres came later. So I wouldn't say because it's not conscious rap, therefore it's not hip-hop. Conscious rap itself, hip-hop, when it was born, it wasn't conscious rap necessarily. So I definitely agree fully with, it's a big menu, you choose from it. But I think that we, myself and many others who love our conscious rap, we get so hooked on it that maybe obsessed with it that we come up with terms like real hip hop, as if there's real hip hop and there's fake hip hop. If you listen to us, we love our conscious rap, but really I think the truth of it is that it's all hip hop. These are just sub genres, I would say.
Did you say pioneers? Be careful with pioneers, right? In the beginning, it was this pure conscious hip hop. We were all enlightened beings, and then all got messed up by Warner Brothers and Disney and A&M Records and I&M Records, etc. So that's not necessarily true. My idea is one of the first hip hop popular songs. If you have an
I just want to add a bit onto that. What people need to understand is that some people get lost in the nostalgia of what a certain time of hip hop represented. Like once gangster rap was for a certain time, at the beginning of conscious rap, it stood for a certain time. So once that time ended, what was supposed to happen? So hip hop is not just like a form of gangster rap and this rap and that. It's a culture, and the culture changes and shifts, and so the what happens in that will shift all the time as well. So I think that's what it is.
Okay, so the things shift. There is no pure form. There is no. Let me see if I can come to you. So there isn't an original moment. It's sort of myths of origin. I can get it out. Even Smithman people.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I just sort of fell over this room's point that the gangster concept, just the gangster is an iconic figure in the culture. This is the person usually used, but there were female gangsters in history who resists, who refuses to bow down to the other. To the, what you talk about, the culture of the other, or the physical enslavement and imprisonment. So the gangster is the bad nigga who has the, who resists the power of the oppressor. So gangster rap is, I mean, the icon that it comes from, the cultural icon that it derives from is one of counterculture, countering the mainstream, countering oppression, countering the still existing neo-enslavement, we call it in the movement days. So I think we have, I think that's never been, and if you intend to just be dismissive of the gangster rap in hip hop, then understanding the historical and cultural origin of the gangster figure.
Yeah, this is a really good line of thought, and for all the comments you made, just to follow up on G, is that the whole post-industrial situation that we talk about as a context that gave birth to hip hop, then you have high levels of unemployment, high levels of street activity, right? Creating these kinds of situations where gangsters are not the money shoot 'em up, bang, bang, but are organizations that youth created out of the lack of organizations, right, to serve a political purpose. And a lot of the history of the gangs that is sort of thrown around were developed in order to be sort of mentoring purposes, political purposes, organizational units, where families have fallen apart due to drugs and crack and all that epidemic that we talk about. So that post-industrial context has to be linked to a term like that, gangster, which I've never heard an artist, and I've talked to a lot of artists, so I'll give you, there's a couple of examples. So the terms gangster and conscious, what this brother was saying right here, what G was saying, I was talking with Mos Def, Yasin Bey. Most people know who Mos Def is, Yasin Bey. And he took on the term conscious. And he was telling me that, because everybody was asking him, yo, you're conscious rap, you're representing conscious rap, you and Talib, you're conscious rap. And he said, you know what, stop calling me that. Stop calling me that. Because what you do and what the industry does is package you and put you in a box and then separate you from your people, you from your hood, you from the ghetto, who you're trying to speak to, because conscious gets labeled as alternative, gets labeled as white, gets labeled as apolitical. And he was pissed off at that. So on the other side of the things, I was talking to Scarface of Ghetto Boys, right? One, you guys all know Scarface. And he was telling me that in terms of gangster, that a gangster is defined as someone who has the power to change things. And that the industry and government, and they want to censor us and refer to us as gangster rap. When the government itself has the power, damn, those are real gangsters. Shit, is what he said. Right? So there's a flipping. The gangster flips the definition of gangster in terms of power, which is really what this struggle is about. Quote-unquote gangster or quote-unquote conscious, it's about flipping the power structure in one way or another by whatever context and whatever sort of upbringing that you know how. And I think there's, so outside of that, what I just want to point to is that we talk about race and we talk about gender and social constructions. We need to remember that gangster and conscious are constructions. They're not actual categories that were in the record store.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? That's a huge thing, because all of a sudden we fall into those traps and those binaries that you were talking about, Adam, and then we end up limiting the potential of the artist, not just to create music, but then to be a full human being who could express the full range. Gangsta one day, conscious the next, party the next. You know, so there's a certain kind of damage that we do to the artist, and I've never met an artist who was okay with this kind of discussion.
This reminds me of a skit on one of the Common albums, with, you know, he basically the persona of you know, the conflict about that, he's talking to his sister, who's a journalist, and then, you know, the sex worker comes in, and, you know, it's cold out there, did you get back out there? And he slaps her.
Starts from Mr. Conscious.
Yeah, to the pit. And he goes, what were you saying, my sister? Yes, you know.
Yeah, so,
what the hell just happened?
I mean, so what's beautiful about that is that it's a deconstruction of those categories right before our very eyes in the form of a skit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That all of that is bullshit, mm-hmm. right? And the fact is that people are trying to make music to survive, however way we criticize it, it's working and functioning in different ways.
So we're really talking about the artist's attempting to seize agency and resist interpolation by the mainstream hegemonic media machine. And so, you know, if you choose to embrace the word conscious, as some artists with immortal technique does, I suppose, if you embrace the term thug and gangster, you know, it's about agency. And Tupac would be the best example of that. I mean, the whole thug life thing. I mean, this. There are these amazing speeches that people have now uploaded onto YouTube. He's addressing the NAACP and he's young, but he is as phenomenal as his mother was. You know,
we've seen another thing develop that makes me really critical of these kinds of labels is that in the US now, the contemporary situation of black Americans in the US now is you can link it to the global context where it's the U.S. and it's Israel and it's other countries on the war on terror and the terrorist and whoever is sort of presenting an opposite view is labeled as terrorist, which lays the groundwork for their annihilation. Gangsta and thug are used in precisely the same ways in the U.S., embedded into our legal system such that now the gatherings, which is similar to what happened here, where you can gather in three people at a time and be labeled a gang, right? Even if you're protesting peacefully, that then the label of gangster and thug has been used to then allow for the complete sort of political silencing and annihilation at some points. Because if people are not aware, African Americans in the United States and Latinos are dying at large numbers at the hands of police still today, every single day. Right? And part of it is, man, doing hip hop stuff, you don't want to reproduce that discourse that allows people to get killed, you know?
So. What they say. So I had you on that side. There is something I want to do. I want to. How many people know Beach Bad by Lupe Fiasco? What? Do you want to watch the video? Because I'd like to know what you think of it in relation to this discussion. I was going to play something else, but as this unfolds, I'm thinking, you know, there's another level of complexity to this argument about binaries. Let me just get you quickly, and it's just, I was keeping time. Yeah.
Thanks. I'm glad you're going to show that video, because we keep losing the gender discussion, and I think that's a reflection of where hip-hop's at in terms of women. And I'd like to hear from people who know more about it. For me, an interesting figure right now as a feminist is Drake, because he's commercially successful and he's not necessarily challenging political governance, but he's challenging definitions of manhood because he sings about women, less so about women as bitches, but more so about a man who loves women, who feels, who has emotion, who breaks down, who cries about love. And I find it a very interesting figure, but I feel I watch responses to his music, and a lot of the men sort of gay bash him and say negative things about him. He's a softie, he's a sissy. So for me, this question of his hip hop and masculinity intrigues me, and I want to hear more about that from the audience, from everyone.
Okay.
course, let's not forget Angel Hayes. And am I saying, you're going to say it, right? Can we come to you quickly? Don't forget,
thank you for that, and I just wanted to kind of add on and question whether or not we would then call or could call Drake a conscious rapper in certain contexts. And I know that a lot of people would probably moan and groan about that, and I think that that's partly because of how we define conscious rap and gangsta rap. It's associated with a certain type of political belief, I believe, and I wonder whether or not, kind of going back to the gangsta rap thing, if we could, I guess if we could call gangsta rap political and therefore conscious in some ways, just because they are maybe not the politics that we aspire to, does that mean it's inherently not political? So I guess there are a couple things in there.
Definitely.
I just want to say something, and it's kind of related to what you were saying about Drake, and I think it also relates really nicely to the Bitch Bad video by Lupe Fiasco. And it's this question about like the difference between rappers talking about, you know, wanting to respect women's rights or talking about, you know, not calling women bitches, but not necessarily giving women agency in their music. And it's something I run into a lot with Drake's music because he talks a lot about loving women and, you know, this, that, and the third, but it's all in this very controlling context. And I think that he very much still wants them to be his women. He's kind of talking about, you know, this is a girl that, you know, like I'm with, that she should be with me for agency reasons. And sometimes he does get emotional, but he doesn't always give women agency in his music, and he doesn't always talk about them as full human beings. And I think it's something that comes up in the Lupe video as well, and I think we'll kind of get to see that, where he still struggles to kind of give women a real voice in the song. So he talks a lot about don't call women bitches, but he's not necessarily talking about the complexities of his own masculinity and breaking that down. He's also not really talking about where women actually fit into the equation. He's not really putting the mic back and really allowing them to have their say. So I think that it's just something to be conscious of, that, you know, I think that, you know, being a feminist in your music or being a conscious rapper is more than just saying these things, it's really being about it. And so I think that with Drake, I think that I have a lot of other issues with Drake that we can talk a lot more about, but I think that it really kind of boils down to, are you talking about it or are you being about it? And those are two very different things, and it's very difficult to live out conscious values on an everyday basis, or even in the body of your music and your work. So, yeah.
I was going to say that. Do I need the mic? Again, it comes back to, I mean, a lot of people would say that, you know, good talent is useless without good management. But a lot of these artists who are talented have bad management, I guess, in terms of how they get misguided. If Drake had to perform at 2 o'clock at UCT, he'd probably do a song like, you know, what's it, Hold On Girl, We're Going Home, because everybody would be singing along. If he had to sing at 2 o'clock in the morning at a club, people don't want to hear love songs. And he's going to say, I love bad bitches, that's my different problem. Because at 2 o'clock in the morning, no one wants to hear that the government administered AIDS or conspiracy theories. They want to turn up, forget that they owe people money, they find you go home with someone's wife or whatever the case may be, because it's a club. So I'm just saying again, I guess, and this is not directed at you and or the fact that I don't think I drink so much, but it's again, you know, it's different strokes for different folks. I guess sometimes these guys get put up because someone says you gotta wear that. And when I talk to kids in schools, I always said, Kanye West could take a picture of his breakfast and make it a CD cover, and people will still buy a million copies. But he chooses to do something like have a white woman have sex with a dog or something on the cover because he's Kanye West, you know? And I guess Drake also knows that, you know, you can get, I mean, as a DJ for me, when I'm doing a party, if I play for the women, dudes are gonna come to the floor. I don't play, you know, a most dear for a dead brisk social concert song at 2 o'clock in the morning at the club if people are trying to, you know, to party or whatever.
I just wanted to step in with the whole gangster thing as well. For me, personally, I think as an artist, and a feel that you, when we kind of think of things within the consciousness realm in this day and age, if you look at the just the situation globally, I think it's our responsibility to take a degree of responsibility in how we project and what we say. Because not only is the music restricted to this country, this town, this territory in the south, west coast, east coast, wherever the case may be, we now have the internet and we can now access music instantly. So if I come across and I project myself as a gangbanger and I'm calling women bitches and I'm telling people I've come into your house, slice up your mom, shoot your dad, rape your dog, whatever the case may be, now you're getting some kid in Manenberg, in Cape Town, listening to that, the beats banging, and he's like, yo, my bro, today I need to go get myself a gun, and put myself, oops, out. This thing is psyching and hyping it up, and it's contributing to a problem on the other side of the world. You see, so that's my problem and my issue that I have with these characters, you know. And yes, in certain instances, it all works on a formula, sex, drugs, rock and roll, a level of notoriety, you have to kind of project that, that's all about, you know, the mega ego, because that turns the markets on and labels actually believe that, you know, and it's all tapping into taboo as well, you know. So if you're kind of projecting and you're plugging into all those type of things, it's kind of, it's almost like you're getting this boost in publicity, you know. And on the other end, as a person, as a human being, you're not really that way if you see them outside of that sort of artist, performer, gangster, rapper, whatever you want to call it, realm. And as I pointed out with the conscious guys as well, you know, there's conscious rappers putting out conscious music, but as a human being, they're not really conscious. They come into other people's countries, towns, homes, and they're so inconsiderate, you know. So for me, if you want to label yourself as an artist, or you still want to cherish what we do as an art form, I think it should come with a degree of responsibility. I'm not trying to dictate. But that's just my personal feeling, and that's kind of where I am in my life right now, you know, and my sort of observations and feelings about certain things. So you're caught up between a rock and a hard place at certain times as well, as DJ Easy have just mentioned right now, to come back to the economics as well. So as a DJ, you're getting booked to play in certain arenas, at certain venues, whatever the case may be as well. So you end up contradicting yourself, and you end up, you know, anyway, playing that particular track because there's so many people requesting that track. You see, so there's always a dilemma. And for me, the main issue of the question is, how are we going to change that? How are we going to influence and encourage future artists, entrepreneurs, managers, labels, music video producers, radio, DJs? How are we going to influence the community to maybe consider, you know, a different take on that, and how are we actually going to make that a commercial entity as well, so that at least there's a degree of integrity in that? That's my...
Any suggestions on that? Everybody's a good answer. Yeah, answer.
Answer
me.
Suggestion.
I've been managing for the last 20 years. Somebody has got to have that answer. Come on. I mean, part of it is about contesting with market forces. The issue is we've got an infrastructure that is so commercialized that there's no space for other kinds of commercial activity that compete or can coexist peacefully. The one. It's not just about market imperatives dominating the field. It's about this. Sorry, I'm going to come back to you. I mean, the best explanation that I've had for this is bell hooks. The sexist, misogynist, patriarchal ways of thinking and behaving that are glorified and gangsterized are a reflection of the prevailing values in our society, values created and sustained by white supremacist, capitalist patriarchy. This is like from a 94 publication, a 94 book. This is still the best explanation. Don't get upset about what Gangster Rap is doing. It's the reflection of the biggest story. The sort of political economy that we are implicated in isn't just capitalism, it's a different kind of capitalism, right? Which always somehow conveniently privileges the white masculine heterosexual position. It gives those down to the kind of elite interests. And if anything else rises up, then that minority is who the gatekeeper call out, are the kinds of individuals into that story, right? Into that very static minority that Isaac in this country does so because the major corporations decided that we need to call up these willing black individuals. It kind of works the same. I mean, it reminds me of something from Patricia Collins, Black Sexual Politics, which talks about video hoes, right? And how the kind of aesthetic in gangster rap led to sex tourism to Brazil, for example. Affluent black men were now going to Brazil to find these Brazilian honeys on the beaches, right? So women are complicit on some level as well. So, you know, is it power? Is Beyonce seizing agency? Or is she giving a certain amount of power in order to profit? It's a way of thinking about the world, which isn't exclusively into hip hop.
I have a contribution to your answer, not the answer. We should have more of this because we don't talk enough about these things. So the only thing that we are talking about is what is currently out there, which is what the media and the corporations are pushing towards us. And I was just, while everyone was contributing, thinking about how do we get to the whole conscious and knowledge of self thing. If I asked my grandparents or their parents, were they gangsters when they were around, I don't know if they would be able to say yes to that. But there was a threat to their physical safety, and because of that, they had to empathize with one another, and they had to look after each other. So now, for the most part, I can go home and I don't feel so, I don't have to feel that much fear. But there's other things like, how am I going to pay my brother's school fees? But I don't have somebody in my family or in my street who I could approach and then say, this is our problem, this is what we have money-wise. We have one car, the school is in the next neighborhood, how can we work that out? So we don't have, we have little resources, but we don't want to share with one another because when we got to a point where we had access to those resources, everybody was like, this is mine now, and I'm not sharing it with anybody. So we don't have enough workshops, and we don't have enough areas where we could actually go, you know what, our thinking is flawed. We have a little bit, let's see how we can distribute it amongst ourselves till we get to a point where we have a corporation. We have a record label or a DJ school where now we could produce new DJs. So there's a little of that. That's my contribution. Get back to that real knowledge of self where I could actually say, Nadine is a friend of mine, how can I help her in her career? But coming to every gig, telling every person I know of doing them along. I don't know if that.
It sounds as if you're talking about a shift from a time where there was a stronger sense of community to the present day where everybody is focused on individual needs, individual wants and desires, accumulating things for themselves, and only thinking about themselves.
Let go of it because if you leave it, you're not going to keep that away. Because once you lose that status, nobody's going to know you are. So you have to hold on to the status and to hold on to that, you have to keep doing the same.
It reminds me of these financial industry advertisements. You didn't even be sure.
And
yeah, basically. So, I mean, you're talking, I mean,
Some of the culture we've been so aggressive, we're so immersed in your liberal dream at last resort, something to say. Our sense of community has been split, we've completely split. Good afternoon. I'm just thinking of just to latch on to what Althea was saying. Remember when Africa Bambaataa came to South Africa, in Africa, when he got the UNICEF scholarship? He was a member of the Black Spades gangs in New York, came to Africa and take his own, went back and came up with the concept of the Universal Zubilation Fund, where he said, okay, we're going to have like, these four elements, breakdowns, graffiti, art, seeing DJ, right? And at that point, I would say for about 10 to 15 years, you know, all these groups that used to perform, you know, it was all inclusive of all those elements, right? Once major corporations saw, okay, cool, we can make money out of rap, that is where the shift began, right? So, which was kind of a good thing because all of these elements would become self-sustainable, you know, but it was also bad as well. But back then, you know, the motto was all about each one, teach one, you know, and that is the thing that's missing. It's what Althea is referring to, which was kind of, I think for us here, which is a major component, you know, in our small little hip-hop community that we had, you know, back then. And that ethos does not exist nowadays, like you say. And I think we can kind of reclaim that, you know, train of thought, maybe that could help the problems that we have today regarding that issue.
While I go up there, I just want to join you before we all go and slit our wrists or try for hip hop. I'm going to join you to, I mean, these are historical examples. This is, on the one hand, you know, Neil Gunson with Black Noise has been running various events like fighting the African hip hop embargo through which hip hop communities are constituted. He's also have the Asia of Real Movement. I've been running this probably like more than 10 years. I remember it was about 1998. I did an article for the Daily Guardian and a few other publications about the work that Gilbert does. So it's been around for a while. We've got Gardesa and All Field Hip Hop Crew doesn't exist anymore. They're all doing their own thing. They started this thing called Rogue State Alliance, which was a partnership with MCs from Switzerland. It was funded using the logic of the NGO logic, again, using donor funding, etc. So there have been all sorts of projects that have come and gone. This was a good one. We lost it for a decent while. These cats over here are involved in a number of initiatives, some of it aligned to religious institutions, some of it not. We've got a car freak sitting in the middle there, Big Drifter, who actually uses his passion for cars, but he's not DJing, he's drifting, right? His partner, Monica, is one of the craziest drifters ever. I'm like, okay, I'll just stand along the side and watch for the same distance. What they do is actually work in the community, use people's interest for cars, people's interest for music, and draw youth into youth development programs. People working with the South African Police Service, I believe. Not community policing forums?
The Mitchells Plain Community Police Forum is one of the organizations that we work with. We've got a project up and running called GCAP, the Great Cape Ambassadors Project. And we do receive assistance from the South African Police Services out in Mitchells Plain. So they provide transport to get the kids from point A to point B. And I'm not sure if we need to get into that right now. I think maybe we can come back to that again. But let's.
The point that I'm making is that there's a great amount of agencies outside of the formal commercial music industry. So a lot of stuff going on. It's partnership with government or NGOs, people in the community. Not all of it is necessarily funded. People are just volunteering, doing things. I often catch a number of hip hop artists, whether they're MCs or graphs, just teaching kids stuff, doing some program. Not so long ago, Manisha Skullin started something called the Rebel Arts People's Project. Right? Yeah. So that was an NGO in a community, drawing kids who will come out of school to occupy them and inspire them to do creative things. So all of these things that are going on outside of the formal music industry. Emil's a good example because Emil was like, you know what, Black Noise could pursue the next record deal, let's not do that, let's do our own thing, sell music from our backpacks, record the stuff at home, and then go out into the communities and do work. And when they travel, they take a whole lot of fees with them and they sell it along the way, but that's not really the thing they're doing, the things they're doing workshops. And they made a life out of it. So there's a whole other sort of subterranean, yeah, I call it that, unofficial, not recognized by the formal music industry.
I just want to bring something to everybody's attention. You know, it's all well that all those things are happening. Just to get back to the capitalism issue, you know, with regards to a lot of people knocking on doors for support, and a lot of people that's in positions to be able to help assist, you know, iron out certain issues, whether it's on the business front, whether it's on a cause, whether it's education, whatever the case may be. One of the big problems that we are faced with, you know, with, there's a lot of people that's not really taught how to deal or how to behave, how to act, and they're not educated, you know, how to deal within this capitalist parameter. So that's where corruption come in. That's where principles get broken down. If you look at government, for instance, you know, certain people just miraculously become millionaires overnight. So this is all deals. This is all cronyism. These are all things that's happening. Everything's happening under the tables. We're looking at all these, what do they call it, outsourcing and subcontracting and all these types of things. People that's not in a level, they have no expertise whatsoever, but they get in the big deals and the big contracts, and everything gets filtered down to people within their circle if they feel that they are able to be, you know, to be able to extract some extra revenue out of that. And unfortunately, that doesn't filter down to the bottom, to the grassroots where the great problems are. You're looking at the gang problems, you're looking at abuse, you're looking at education, you're looking at the medical issues and all those type of stuff. So those funds just tend to circulate, you know, just sort of on one level, on one plane of society, and everybody else is knocking and banging on doors because now we have an issue. For instance, arts and culture, the education departments, if you look at the health departments, they're still stuck with huge budgets that they haven't spent. You know, they have to spend this money, but they're not educated and trained in terms of how to spend the money, and people, they are dying out there, you know. If you look at artists, not just from a hip-hop perspective, you look at jazz artists, you look at poets, you look at people within the creative arena, you're looking at painters, you know, those types of personalities, architects. We are now the design capital for 2014. Me personally, I've seen no evidence of design in my area. When I went to Mitchell's Plain, when I go to Googs or Langa, I don't know what the hell's going on with this design business. I don't see it. You know, it's not tangible to me, you know. So that's a huge, huge problem for me, you know, with all these issues.
Oh, you answered this question. Before you asked it.
I guess we were all on the same wavelength.
Typically, Bob, I was going to ask a question, but you answered.
Oh, sorry.
We're almost at the end, but what I want to go from here is, I'd like to come back. I mean, I think the moment for talking about Louis Fascio and stuff, that moment has come and gone. So we won't do that. But
yes, let's do it.
No, let's do it.
Or Garnese's social ills, which no one has seen.
Yes. Social ills.
Which is more closely.
Do you have social
ills? I've got anything here. I
mean, do social ills.
Social ills, yes.
And if time permits, and let's do Lupe Fiasco. Okay, well. I mean, we're all familiar with Lupe Fiasco,
yeah,
but...
This is off-off.
Yeah, off-off. Speech bad, then you got... Angel Hayes did a back patcher to Beach Bad. Mm. You can only get it if you know the Fiasco.
Yeah.
So you have to choose. Let me give you a taste of a sort of a critique of cultural imperialism that is gendered. This is about body politics and about, you know, from a gender-based perspective, but it's also a critique of mass media, of media monopolization.
So maybe social care or society breeds like a riot. We kill the reality that feeds on the air that we breathe. It's only to you see, to the eyes of the whole that I can see. Is it your life in speakers or feel like that creatures? But how about conduct that features in stores? Connecting statuses like wars on low calories. Or trying to have to meet with fashionable jeans so expensive. Can't help but seem apart from the law that gives the form of art. It's a normal life is dark. Don't you know anime? Right from the start, it's hard to understand why you don't wear what you like. You wear what you think that they think is tight. And I don't think they try to find rap because of gender bars all over the world.
Anyone want to comment on this, or can we give you a test? You can, I'm sure you can find this on YouTube. It was done 11 years ago?
This one?
This one?
Yeah, 11 years ago. Yeah.
2003, yeah.
So, it explains the production style. It sounds dated now, but I think you did put Luca Fiasco or Angel Hayes? How many have seen the original that she vehicles? Actually, it's not a video, it's just the song. You'd have to have heard Luca Fiasco to get it.
To get it, yeah.
To get the... I know we... Are we on the hour? Are we on the pressure to get out?
Yes.
Can we go for 5 minutes? We are the organizers. Let's go for 5 minutes. Let's just give you a quick taste of the Fiasco. It's a critique of blackface and hip hop and art and the arts complicity. The modern day minstrel set. Yeah, I gave it away. Sorry.
Something from the gender perspective. And this is the response.